Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Today on the stream, what's next for Burkina Faso after last week's coup that toppled the country's democratic elected president? If you're joining us on YouTube, you can leave your comments in our live chat and be part of today's program. Rising public anger over the country's security crisis helped fuel the January 24th coup in Burkina Faso. The constitution has now been restored and the military has named coup leader Lieutenant Colonel Paul-Henri Sandaogo-Damiba interim president. Al Jazeera's Nicholas Huck picks up the story from Ouagadougou.
We're on a road called the Avenue of the Revolution, and the building that you see right next to me is what is left of the National Assembly. It was stormed in a popular uprising in 2014, and look at it. You can see bullet marks on the building. They've left it like that so that this building serves as a reminder of the sacrifices paid by people to restore democracy in this country. It also serves as a reminder to leaders that they are accountable to the people. Now, fast forward to today, another coup, this time led by Lieutenant Colonel Paul-Henri Damiba. In an address to the nation, he says that he's not going to quash those democratic achievements that have been made in the last 8 years. He says there'll be freedom of speech and an independent justice system. So why this coup then? Well, this country is facing attacks from armed groups linked to Al-Qaeda and ISIL, and they're gaining ground. Almost 2 million people have been displaced in this country. 3.5 million people are in urgent need of humanitarian assistance. Some of them have sought safety here in the capital, Ouagadougou. Damiba has called on civilians to take up arms. Some say dialogue is the solution, that these are Al-Qaeda fighters or ISIL fighters only by name. They are, in fact, driven not by ideology, but by poverty in areas where the state has largely been absent. Meanwhile, the West African body ECOWAS has suspended Burkina Faso. It sees this latest coup as a setback to democracy that has seen a series of coups in the region. There has been, though, criticism of the institution. It's seen by many as a president's club, more interested in protecting its own interests than the interests of the people. There is here at the heart of what we're seeing a crisis of trust in democracy, in the way that it's being played out in these various countries, including Burkina Faso. Nicholas Hawk in Ouagadougou for the stream.
Joining our conversation today to really unpack what is happening in Burkina Faso from down on the ground, we have Lassane and we have Henri. Really nice to have both of you with us. Lassane, please introduce yourself to our stream audience. Tell them who you are, what you do. We'll come back to Lassane in just a moment. And Henri, nice to have you here on the stream. Please introduce yourself to our global audience. Good to have you.
Yeah. So my name's Hemi. I'm a journalist. I've been based in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, for 2 years now. I'm a freelance, but work in television and radio, and have really been covering the security situation here for a couple of years now.
So, Henry, Nicholas Huck did a special story for us, a special report for us. You were just watching it right there for us at the beginning of the week, really showing us what was happening on the ground and his analysis of what led to the coup. If you could take me around today, what is the atmosphere like? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, since the coup took place, things have really calmed down on the streets of Ouagadougou. On the Monday last week, when the coup was happening, I mean, there were soldiers on the street. They'd taken over the national broadcaster and so on. But really, the following day, this had all started to dissipate. Things are calm now. Today is the national football team is competing in the AFCON football tournament, and you know, people are turning out on the streets to watch that, and venues around the around the city. If you were to just sort of go out onto the streets of Ouagadougou, you really wouldn't notice that much had changed.
I'm wondering about the reaction, because on some of the reaction video that I saw from people in the streets, there were Russian flags, people were celebrating the coup had happened. Does that give us a sense of the public's opinion of the coup?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the day after the coup happened, several thousand people did turn out on the streets of Ouagadougou in the Place de la Nation, where many demonstrations take place. What was interesting was that the demonstrations which happened before the coup had been stopped from happening in the Place de la Nation by local police. We're talking about demonstrations to show support for the military and protest the former government's handling of security in the country. I mean, these were protest demonstrations that were put down, you know, with the use of force, tear gas and so on. So seeing this square filled for the first time, you really gave you an idea that something had changed, and you know, a lot of people were out on the streets and showing a lot of support for the new military government. I mean, something else that was really striking was that we even saw people waving Russian flags at the demonstrations to celebrate the coup the day after, which. Yeah, for all sorts of reasons, has raised a lot of questions, and it's brought into the kind of national conversation here in Burkina Faso. This whole thing of whether the existing sort of status quo with international partners in terms of security is really working. You know, Burkina Faso has been working closely with France on security matters over the last 5-6 years. The fact that security really hasn't improved has led some people to start wondering if there needs to be a shake-up of Burkina Faso's international military partners, which has led some people to look towards possibly Russia.
I want to bring in a new voice into our conversation, and this is Daniel Eisenger. He's a research fellow at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He asked a really good question. Here he is.
The immediate impact of the military coup in Burkina Faso is just one of disruption and diversion, a diversion of attention, a diversion of resources, a diversion of personnel, and confusion around the situation and who's really in charge. In the long term, this presents opportunities for different armed groups, criminal groups, to take advantage of that confusion and to further embed and entrench themselves in Burkina Faso's countryside. This will make confronting the threat more complicated, presents a greater challenge, and ultimately results in a pessimistic outlook.
Two things I'm really interested in picking up on, and one is who's really in charge? Let's start with that one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Paul Henri Damiba, as you said, has taken control. I mean, the army is very much now in control of Burkina Faso. It's swept away this democratic government, which was in place for around 6 years. So, yes, the army is in control of the politics of Burkina Faso and certainly the major towns and cities. But venture outside of the large towns and cities into the countryside, and you know, state control is really just fallen away. As I said, the conflict between armed groups linked to Al Qaeda and Islamic State has been going on for 6 years now, and in the more remote parts of the countryside, it's not the state that's in control, it's not the army that's in control. They're fighting a losing battle, and these armed groups are the ones that are, you know, have free run of the place, and to a certain degree, they are at least attempting to carry out certain functions of the state in their own way. So, yeah, in short answer to your question, I mean, the military, it seems, now control the major towns and cities. In the countryside, it's the armed groups.
I'm going to bring in this tweet. This is from Sujat Amin, who knew that we were doing this program today. And on this tweet, he brings up some of the issues that I wanted you to unpack for us, Henry. And he talks about the dire human security conditions in Burkina Faso, that they're complex. There's food insecurity. There's social tensions. There's political tension as well. People use that phrase, insecurity or lack of security. What does that really mean, Henry? If you're going to take us somewhere, show us someplace, explain how people behave, that is such a threat that people welcomed, some of them welcomed a coup.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, sort of out in the countryside, we're talking about small villages and so on where they don't see any evidence of the state, really. I mean, there's security forces don't make their way to many of these villages. You know, other functions of the state, like the judiciary and so on, don't apply there. Rule of law is weak there. So what that means is that these armed groups are essentially able to ride into these villages on motorbikes unhindered, harass the local people, try to implement elements of Sharia law. They start preaching at the mosques there and start, you know, giving an idea to the local people of what they don't want to see. And if they don't if the local people don't follow these rules, then you know, then they threaten them with violence, and often this violence, this threat turns into very real attacks where these terror groups ride into the villages and really just massacre people. I mean, middle of last year in June saw the largest attack since Burkina Faso's conflict began, where 160 civilians at the very least were killed at an artisanal gold mine in the north of the country. As you rightly said, it's a complex thing. I mean, development in these areas of the country is really lacking as well. So, you know, people are... it's a big push factor for people to join these armed groups as well, the fact that they've just been neglected by the government. And something else that we're seeing in these areas of the country is vigilante groups starting up as well. So, you know, these groups that are not part of the state, but at least they're able to provide some kind of law and order within these parts of the country where the state has fallen away. They're not as bad as the terror groups that are operating in some parts of the country. But even these vigilantes have provide a kind of brutal justice, you can say, and have human rights, bad human rights records, to say the least.
We have some thoughts. We have some questions on YouTube from our audience watching right now, Henry. So this one, wondering quite simply, how are the people doing? Is there a sense of getting back to normal, whatever normal is? And we don't answer quite yet because I want to go to Haja. And Haja is really concerned about the civilians. We spoke to Haja a little bit earlier, and this is what she sent us. Immediately after the back of Haja's video, please pick up.
The current situation in Burkina Faso following the coup is likely to increase the amount of human suffering that we have witnessed since 2018. At the end of last year, about 4.7 million people were in need of humanitarian aid, and about 1.5 million people were forcibly displaced. So the protection of civilians and the unrestricted delivery of humanitarian aid should be at the center of every decision that is and will be made about Burkina Faso in the coming days, weeks, and months.
Yeah, so I mean, there isn't a sense that the that things are getting back to normal. I mean, as Hadja rightly said, there's a huge humanitarian crisis going on in the country. More than 1.5 million people have already been displaced by the conflict. The humanitarian side of things is only getting worse. I mean, I've spoken to humanitarians in the last week or so who say they're projecting that the number of people in need of aid in Burkina Faso could be as high as 2.2 million by the summer. So, yeah, I mean, and the other thing is the visibility of these displaced people has been a real problem as well. With the previous government, there was this kind of truculent relationship between the humanitarian ministry in particular and the humanitarian organizations that were that are working in Burkina Faso, which has been well documented. And in fact, the humanitarian ministry implemented a ban on journalists visiting IDP sites throughout the country from 2020, which came in the wake of a Oxfam report, which reported on gender-based violence happening within IDP sites, which, you know, obviously the humanitarian ministry of Burkina Faso saw this as very bad press for them. And this is what kind of triggered this, this ban on journalists visiting IDP sites. So, you know, when the message of this the images of this humanitarian crisis, there's no way for them to get out into the to the broader sort of international community, then that has made the situation worse for the displaced people in Burkina Faso. Now, as I say, this was under the previous democratic government. All of the ministers who were part of that government have now been removed from their positions after Lieutenant Colonel Damiba took power last week. So it really remains to be seen sort of whether this relationship that Burkina Faso has with the media and with humanitarian groups who have complained that the state has made their operations difficult as well, improves. That I think that will be a real test of the new military junta.
You mentioned Burkina Faso's relationship with the media, which is a really good point to bring back, Lassane. Lassane, thank you so much for your patience. I hear there's a little footy game going on right now, which may well have degraded our internet connection with you. So I'm so glad that you're back with us. All right, so Lassane, will you just briefly introduce yourself to our audience so that they remember who you are, your perspective that you're coming from? Go ahead.
Dr. Lassane Ouedraogo, I teach as an adjunct professor in one of the private schools here, Université Libre du Burkina. I also teach at Université de Ouagadougou. But I am also mostly doing research on the ground here and interacting with a lot of folks who obviously come here either as media experts or research experts trying to understand the situation on the ground here over the past 6 months.
Lassane, there is a debate, a mini debate that's going on online right now, on YouTube right now, as our audience are watching this show. So Peter, for instance, says, if the military can make Burkina Faso better, let them continue ruling the country. And then Hydro, in response, says, coups are not the solution. This little debate here, is that a debate that is being reflected in country where you are right now?
Absolutely. That debate is clearly reflected in the country here, with most people clearly stating that we have tried with electoral democracy so far. It has not worked properly for us. We had our first civilian elected government, and the only thing that we have seen is incompetency in all of its forms. The president had done everything he could do, replacing the government several times, replacing key military leaders, but the situation, the security situation, has not improved. And it's gotten worse and worse, so people are fed up. So I believe like that is a sort of a new paradigm in terms of our understanding of what democracy is all about. Do we have to keep up with that narrow understanding of democracy as the majority, the voice of the majority through electoral voices, where we put into place people who are super incompetent, or do we try something new? And we might want to also pay attention to what is happening overall in the sub-region. That might also be influencing, because clearly Damiba and his folks have looked over Mali and Guinea, and they see that if you strike right now, you're going to have popular support.
Yeah, Lassane, I'm
and
so glad
exactly
you.
Exactly what is happening.
I'm so glad you said that. I'm going to ask you, Henry, just hold that thought, because I have to show you this graphic. All right, let's just play the map, because Lassane, you just articulated what I was thinking, what we were thinking back here on the stream. Look at these countries that have either had successful coups or failed coups: Guinea-Bissau failed, Mali, Chad, Guinea, Burkina Faso, all had coups. That must have some kind of ripple impact. Henry, what were you thinking? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's even a debate in Burkina Faso at this stage, whether like democracy or military rule is better. Everybody that I'm speaking to, or practically everybody that I'm speaking to, is really saying now that they want military rule. I mean, Burkina Faso, it's only had democracy, or it only had democracy for 6 years, from 2015 until last week. But, you know, even people who were involved in the 2014 insurrection, which was a popular uprising that saw democracy come into the country, even the people who were taking to the streets and fighting for that, I'm talking to them now and they're saying, no, we want to see military rule. Like, democracy just hasn't worked out.
That's so interesting. All right, so we asked earlier some of our audience, Lisanne, I'm going to get you to react to this immediately, some of our audience, about the number of coups that are happening across the continent, particularly in West Africa, and why, and then pick up your thoughts immediately off the back. Let's have a listen, let's have a look.
Every single country has a particular logic that's relevant to its internal dynamics. There are some broad similarities across the region in these countries where coup attempts have occurred, and one of them is a broad political and public dissatisfaction.
I think it's important to understand that some of this occurs within a context of governance failures. The whole purpose of establishing government is so that it provides certain public goods, security, infrastructure, social services. And so when whole segments of the population or entire regions of the country live without a meaningful presence of the state, sometimes for decades, it provides a pretext for those looking to overthrow the government or those looking to take up arms against it.
Absolutely. I think that is what exactly happened in Burkina Faso here. The last intervenant just said it. President Kabore himself saw this coming. He has been warned several times that things are not going well. The expectations from the people over the past couple of years, the prices of basic necessities have almost tripled here in Ouagadougou. Even over the past 6 months, in some areas of Burkina Faso, 100 kilograms of corn has gone from around 20,000 CFA to almost 60,000 CFA. So how many people can afford to live under these conditions? And it's not only the zones that are affected, directly affected folks that experience that in the countryside, but also in the capital city and major cities. We talk about 1.5 million internally displaced people, but the truth of the matter is that there's more to the story than that. In Burkina Faso, most people don't run away from the village and go to a camp. They go to stay with relatives in the first place. And when the relatives cannot afford to host them, that's when they go to the government and then they go to those sites. So there's a lot of people who are not accounted for in those 1.5 million internally displaced people. So the numbers are way, way more than that. If you're hosting two extra people in your house, pardon?
Do you think the military government will be better placed to deal with problems like that than a democratic government, though?
In the short term, I do believe that the military government will try to do some sort of show up. They're going to try to demonstrate that they have the ability to make things change. Of course, in the longer term, we might fall back to a slacking government if we let them stay too long. But in the shorter term, I believe that no matter what we say, they have a clear understanding that the civil society movement in Burkina Faso are not going to let them bring back an old system where there's a military rule with so much incompetency here and there, clear communication about what is happening. And when asked about what is going on, the answer we have from the Kabore government was, oh, this has to do with the security issue in the country, and we don't have anything to explain.
Lisanne, our time with you was so short. And Henry, thank you so much for helping us to stay with us while we were waiting for Lisanne to connect. I really appreciate both of you. As you can tell, we're just starting the conversation. There's so much to talk about. I will get you both back on another edition of the stream. But for now, thanks for watching, everybody. Take care.